So possession of marks is the target to be seen from the possession of marks. The phrase possession of marks translates lakshana sampad, lakshana meaning marks, signs. Sampad comes as translated as possession, but he points out that it can also be translated as excellence. So it's an excellent possession of marks. So what are these lakshanas, these marks? Before we can talk about, you know, that you don't view the Tathagata in that way, we need to understand what the marks, what the lakshanas are. What they're particularly referring to are the 32 major and 80 or 84 minor marks, which traditionally a Buddha is said to possess. He's got all these marks all over his body. So these are physical signs. So he's got the Ushnisha. Some scholars translate as the bodhic protuberance, you know, the lump on the top of the head. So that's one of his marks. Apparently he's got incredibly long arms that go below his knees. Webbed feet, webbed fingers, chakras in the palms of his hand and on the soles of his feet. His penis is withdrawn in a sheath like a horse. And you get these lists of these marks. And they say how glorious they are. When we look at them, they think, goodness, what a weird-looking guy he must have been. And you see them in Buddhist art, and frankly, sometimes it all looks rather ugly to our aesthetics, anyway. These marks, these signs, these attributes are the signs of, as far as ancient Indian tradition is concerned, and I'm not referring to Buddhist tradition, it's sort of, you know, general Indian tradition. They're the signs of the perfect, the ideal, the archetypal man. Banti, in his commentary, points out that these signs, these marks are, it's called a mysterious tradition. And he refers, I think, to Mrs. Rhys-David's researches, that they might hark back to the old Vedic idea, very ancient Indian religious tradition, Vedic myths, of the cosmic man, that the Mahapurusha, the great man, the great being, and the myths who had these signs and marks. One of the creation myths, I think, is of the dismemberment, the sacrifice of the cosmic man. There's another ancient Indian myth of that of the Chakravarti Raja, the wheel-turning monarch, a kind of myth of the great, just, universal king who ushers in an era of justice and goodness with his ruling. And he is said to possess the marks as well of the great man. In fact, later on in the Diamond Sutra, they address this very point, that actually you shouldn't go on marks, because the Chakravarti Raja possesses marks and he's not a Buddha. So evidently that these are where the influences are coming from. These sort of influences are kind of taken over by Buddhists in the way that they looked, the way they saw the Buddha. They're drawing on ancient myths that describe the ideal man and his glorious body. It seems very strange to us, doesn't it? But we have to sort of, you know, reflect that Buddhism is a very ancient tradition indeed, and all sorts of myths and symbols are going to sort of coalesce around the figure of the Buddha, you know, over the centuries. Again, there's things we don't really understand how these things have happened, and it seems strange to us, because probably what's attractive to us, most attractive to us, is that the Buddha is human. His humanity is probably the attractive thing to us, and maybe that says something about our own particular kind of ideals, if you like, in the contemporary world. It's you know, the good human being, the ideal human being that is very attractive to us in a recognisably human sense. You know, we're not particularly keen so much on the kind of cosmic and the and all that sort of thing. Maybe because of, you know, it's been associated with religion and repression and all that kind of thing. So we like the fact that the Buddha is kind of, he expresses his enlightenment, his enlightened qualities, in ordinary virtues, kindness, compassion, awareness, downright common sense sometimes. It's very attractive.